this fall, my sister and I marked the 5th year of running in a race. She's always the instigator behind these competitive things, and I take the bait thinking, well, then I train, and that's good, and it's nice for sibling bonding. And so we started in 2012 with a 5K that starts in downtown Douglas, and then it weaves through the neighborhood there, ends up going down near the Kalamazoo River through Saugatuck and then back to Douglas again. And so I started running, although running is an exaggeration. But at any rate, I started moving faster than walking on a regular basis. And through our backwoods, along our kind of country road, along Lakeshore Drive, we were at our cabin. And truthfully, the motivator for all of this was fear. Fear of, you are so not qualified to run in anything competitive. And so I ran over hill and dale trying to prove otherwise. So the first time that horn sounds is really a pretty thrilling thing. And sure enough, you bolt out of there. My adrenaline was pumping. I was moving forward with the herd. And you discover pretty quickly that the herd thins out. And I noticed I was not at the front of the herd. So then out of, you know, massive insecurity, you begin to notice who's passing you up. So I see like a probably 9-year-old girl and her dad running by pretty effortlessly, having a conversation with each other as they run. And then more challenging is when you notice people who are in your same age bracket, who have that same age card stacked against you, and they are passing you by as well. And so, and then even at the beginning, my sister took off and left me in the dust. So it really struck me, this, I guess, is really kind of an individual sport. I kind of thought we'd get caught up on our children's lives and hear how things were. And clearly that was not her goal. So fears lurked in the deep recesses of my mind at this point. And I thought, okay, so am I going to be so far behind the second to last person that I won't have anyone that helps me know what the route is, because there are times we're along the river and I didn't know where we were. So you start to be really fearful about, you know, what if I come in even later than like the youngest toddler who's ever run a race, or after the oldest woman who ever ran a 5K. But at the end, I finished it. My sister was waiting. Congratulations. And I discovered the joy of finishing a race and just how satisfying that is. So as we were talking together, they begin to announce the winners, which is not what we were hanging around for. We were still catching our breath. And my sister's name is called out as first in our age category. We were in the same age category 5 years ago, and that was not good news for me. So she was excited and stunned and went up to get her medal, and we're hugging each other, and our husbands are there congratulating us. And then my name is called out for third place, and I'm stunned, can't believe it, and think, okay, all my fears all summer were for naught. A friend asked me how many were in my age category, and I said, I don't know, and I don't want to know. I want to believe that most of the runners, even though they look differently, were all my age category. And I still have that third place medal hanging up in my closet. So the next year, our schedule didn't allow us to do that same Douglas race, and so my sister signed us up for one that coordinated with our schedule. So she said, Laurie, it's a duathlon, but we're not going to do the bike riding. We don't do that kind of thing. It starts with the running race. We'll just do that and let the athletes who are stronger than we are do the second part. And she said, but it is a 5-mile race. It isn't 5K. And I'm like, are you kidding me? So at this point, I'm even more fearful and running feverishly all summer, trying to prove myself, running longer and longer distances and imagining the trials and tribulations that I'm going to meet up with on this course. So the morning of the race, we noticed that this is a completely different breed of athletes than the year before. These women are buff. They are wearing running gear that seems very well suited for those bibs that are pinned on with your identifying number, like it's made for that kind of a identifying sign. So the horn took off. This was in the Saugatuck Dunes. The horn goes, and we take off running through the dunes, and we're running in the forest. We're running uphill in sinking sand. There is nothing easy about this. And again, people pass me by. But I'm thinking, well, that happened last year, and I did okay, so I guess that just is what happens. So I had hope. But by probably midway through the 4th mile, I begin to realize, you know, I don't hear anyone behind me. And really, I haven't seen anyone for quite some time. So I come out of the woods, and there is a refreshment station there, and the women kind of startle, like they can't believe there's someone still on the path. They thought everyone was done by that point. So I start saying to myself, you know, actually, it's not all bad, because I got this state park to myself. It was closed down to the public that day, so there's no There's no one talking. There's no 9-year-old and her dad chatting happily as they went by me. There's no thumping footsteps. There's no panting. I've had that before where people are panting behind you. I had the place to myself, so I reassured myself. I knew by now that race planners are keeping track of people. If I get lost in the Dunes Park, they'll come for me. I got to run alongside Lake Michigan on my own. Beautiful. And so suddenly I emerged into the final stretch, and Garrett was there, and my sister was there. Congratulations, big hugs, thinking I'm done, until two semi-annoyed women who are just a little ways ahead of me point out that I haven't crossed the finish line yet, which truthfully wasn't even my goal at that point. It was just to be done. So I obliged, and I did my last effort and crossed the finish line so they could wrap up at the table and then go to the refreshment tank. And so it was strangely quiet because all of the other athletes, these women who were much more fit than we were, had long since taken off on their bikes. They were off doing 12 miles biking, but we all were celebrating that we had finished 5 miles, which we could not imagine that we would have been able to do. And I thought, well, my fears were realized. I was the last place person in a really pretty large group of people. But ultimately, we said, you know what? We climbed up dunes, and we went along the lakefront, and we ran 5 miles. But in evaluating this, my sister and I said, never again. We will never run that race again. We were out of our league. These women were athletes were Amazons compared to us. These were not our people. This was not our race. We would stick to 5K courses with lesser athletes. That would be more suitable for us. But we left both races with a great sense of satisfaction that we'd done it together, we'd trained all summer, and that we had finished the race. So our passage from Exodus brings us into a different kind of race. If we go just a couple of chapters back, we read of the miraculous crossing of the Red Sea, where God parted the waters and they made it across the river from pursuing Egyptians. And they get to the other side, they finish the race, and they can't believe that they have survived. It was a life and death run. And their celebration is verbalized in the song of Moses and his sister Miriam, who sing of their joy at this victory. At the end of chapter 14, we read, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in his servant Moses. So this is the glory moment. They've made it across. They know God has been with them, and they trust their leader. 3 chapters later, they're thirsty. And the newest camp on their unknown journey does not have a refreshment station. There is no water place for them to replenish themselves. And so they cry out to their leader, Moses, for relief. And he then in turn cries out to God, saying, why have you stuck me with these spiritually insecure whiners? And God had responded to their needs not too far before that. God had provided for their need by giving manna and quail that came seemingly out of nowhere. Protein bars, carbs, manna, quail, every day, everything they needed. So this time God directs them to a certain place where God says, I want you to tap on this rock, and then water will come out of it. And so sure enough, he does that, and fresh water flows, but enough to cool down a very irate nation. And Moses scolds the people for their doubt, scolds them for their words where they had said, is the Lord among us or not? God had promised to be with them every step of the way, in easy parts, in difficult parts. God had promised to provide for them and had done so in miraculous ways that they very quickly forgot. And they had promised to place their trust in God after the crossing of the Red Sea. But that fidelity was very short-lived. Uncertainty and hardship erode the confidence of the hardiest among us. Trust was replaced with whining. A lot of whining for the Israelites, and a lot of doubt. Well, in Matthew's gospel, Jesus tells a story about two sons. Any of us who are parents can easily relate to this story that he tells. The dad asks one son to do his chores, and he says, sure, but he doesn't do it. Asks the second son to do chores, and he says, no way, but then he goes ahead and does it. And Jesus says to his audience, which one of these sons do you think was doing what the father asked. Now, of course, we'd like to think that there's a son who is asked, says, yeah, great, and with a smile completes the task, but that's not one of the options. And then neither is the option of the son who says, no way, and doesn't do it. Fortunately, that's not one of the options either. So the people say, well, the one who ultimately did the task. And so that's the child who gets the job done. That's the child who finishes the race that was so reluctantly started. The child who ultimately obeys the instruction of the father, though not always in a pretty way, is the one who is faithful to the task and the relationship. So in these few weeks that we have in the fall where we focus on stewardship of our God-given gifts, we're examining the promises that we are asked to make as people of faith. God promises to be with us always in the race, every step of the way, providing for us, bringing refreshment when it is needed, helping us to see it through, whether we come in first or last, or most of us always somewhere in between. And then our promise to God is that we will be attentive to God's presence, that even when it's not obvious around us or when physical hardship makes it hard for us to focus on God and to believe that God is nearby, that we promise we will look for those signs that God is present and be responsive to that relationship. We've all had moments when we've recognized that we are running with the wrong pack. And this doesn't even necessarily mean that it's bad people. It's just their goals are different. And their workouts aim for a different end result, perhaps, than ours. And so we have to examine that for ultimately the race that we run needs to be run alongside of people who will share our faith and encourage us to cross the finish line into the care of Jesus Christ. And the more we connect deeply with a church family that helps us to do that, then the easier the race is going to be. So our promise to God is to grow in the faith, not to stagnate, not to just sit on the sidelines, not to never enter into the fray because of our fears, but to do it, to get into the race itself, to work alongside of others to bring Jesus into our world that so desperately needs to know about him. And so today we gather around the communion table on this World Communion Sunday, reminding ourselves that Christians of all stripes, of all nationalities, of all races, of all socioeconomic background are gathering around tables all over the world today. And so I picture in my mind those who are in Puerto Rico today, in churches that perhaps were destroyed, or places that are maybe outdoors because that's the way it has to be, but they're gathering around the table today and they are sharing these elements just like we are, invoking the presence of Jesus Christ to help them in their hardship. I imagine that there are people gathering around tables to share their form of bread and wine or juice in Mexico. People who have been digging through the rubble. People who have buried loved ones. And people who inevitably are thankful to God for the day that they've been given today and for the way that they have sensed that God has been present with them. And then the other group I think we want to think about today on this World Communion Sunday is those more than half of Americans are not in church today, aren't looking for guidance in the races they have chosen from Jesus. They are choosing their own race and charting their own course. And so as we are nourished at this table today, we are reminded that we're called to bring stations of refreshment out into the world with people who don't even know that they're looking for a spiritual answer. We want people to be able to see that in our community of faith that Christ is central to who we are and bringing that refreshment. I don't think it's new news to any of us that skepticism about the church is rampant in our country. And people look in and say, well, look at these believers who fight amongst themselves, who have different beliefs and argue for different beliefs. And so it's easy for them to say with a sneer, just like the Israelites did, is the Lord among us or not? And so the responsibility then falls on us to be able to reassure them through our merciful outreach that God is very near, that God is in every race that we commit to, that God is in every crowd providing for us and helping us to see that God is with us. So in a couple of weeks, we're going to invite each household to make a financial pledge to the church for 2018. And my prayer is that through our ministry here together, that you have met the God of Jesus Christ and continue to find yourself called in new directions through that relationship, I pray that you've been strengthened to make and keep the promises you have made to run in that race that leads you to a finish line of faith where Christ is waiting and celebrates at the end. I pray that you've been challenged to join forces with other followers in the church to enter fully into bringing peace into our very broken world. And I pray that you'll continue to be a vital part of this life-giving ministry that we are privileged to offer in our generation, in this time, in this place. Let's pray together.